Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2019 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
My name is Kara Rector, and this class is called, I labeled it two different things. One is on the book, and one is in here, but it's boundaries. What do I do with those? How do I use those? So we're going to talk about boundaries, and I'm going to extend an invitation. It's going to be a lot of self-evaluation, but first, I want to talk. This really isn't about what this lesson's about, but it's a fun teaching tool for kids to talk to them about physical boundaries, and we're going to do that really quick because we are at the home stretch of the conference. We're like getting tired, right? And like, not only is your body tired, but I feel like after lunch on the last day, your brain is tired too. It's been like, you know, full of all this information. So we're gonna go ahead. I'm gonna come back to that page in a minute, but we're just gonna do a really quick, fun teaching tool, physical boundary activity that you can teach your kids. But mostly I'm just doing it here to kind of get us up and get our blood pumping. So everyone, if you want, stand up and give yourself some space. There's a big enough room. We can all do that. Put your arms out to the side. Turn in a big circle. You can do it fast or slow, whatever works. I'm not going to turn in the full circle or I'll get tangled in my mic. So when we talk with kids about physical boundaries, I like using this tool because they can get up, they can move around, they can kind of see it. You can sit down now if you want, or if you just need to stand because I get antsy and, you know, I need to stand sometimes. But anyway, that we are responsible for our physical, our personal bubbles. That personal bubble is our, we're responsible for who can enter and who can't, and what kind of entering they can do and what kind they can't. And for children that are too little to speak for themselves, their emotional, well, not, sorry, not emotional, their physical bubble, their parents are in charge of that for them. And what I like about this is it helps kids. I have kids that are kind of on both sides of this. I have kids that like have a really strong sense of where that personal bubble ends, and you just don't cross it without making them really upset. And then I have other kids that have no concept of a personal bubble, and they're just in everyone's personal bubble and it's fine. But this is kind of a good, fun way to kind of teach some personal bubble space and remind them that just like you have a right to decide who comes and who doesn't into your personal bubble and how, you can say no and you can also respect someone else's personal bubble, that everybody has that. And it's worked. But mostly I just wanted to do that to get everyone like up and moving and maybe flow, you know, get some things going on. So I didn't put this on the handouts. We're going to go back. These, if you want to snap a picture real quick and refer back to it later, are just some helpful internet links that helped me as I was preparing this talk kind of put words to what, I'll get out of your way so you can take a picture, kind of put words to some of the topics we're going to talk about. And what I want to invite you to do, as I've been working through developing a good core strength of boundaries, this is not a natural strong suit for me, not at all. And it's very scary. It requires bravery, and it requires leaning into and becoming a little more comfortable, even a lot more comfortable, with our own vulnerability. So my invitation to you is for this hour, what I tell my kids, if we're getting into something that's going to be a little challenging, a little tough, or a little scary, we say, today's a day for brave things. So my invitation to you is for this hour, while we're talking, my vision is that we can open it up to questions, counsel together, and really build a foundation and some principles and some strategies for boundaries in our lives. And I invite you to come into that garden of vulnerability together and be a team in walking through this and be a safe space for each other during this hour. It's not easy, and I understand that. I grew up not liking the word brave. I don't know where I came up with this idea, but it always sounded patronizing. Like when you're crossing the street, like without holding your parents' hand, and they're like, that was so brave. And I just had that image. Like anytime someone used the word brave, it was like, oh, good for you. You're doing it. But I found myself in need of seeing a counselor a couple years ago because of some struggles that I was having. And he would use the word brave, and I hated it. I was like, oh my gosh, don't use the word brave. But then I decided to give it a try, and I started using it. And that's where we started saying today's a day for brave things in our family. And bravery, to me, it's something that you can do. It's an action that you can do even when something is scary. You can still be brave. Boundaries require bravery because in order to truly embrace the principles of what a true boundary is and to have that foundation in your life, you really have to stare your vulnerability like face to face in a mirror. And that's pretty scary, and that's a brave thing. So this is an hour of brave things. So this class is mostly about our social, personal, social, and emotional boundaries, because in most of our relationships, that's where our stumbling blocks are. So, you know, kind of ponder with me a little bit where your stumbling blocks are and what you might need to hear to help you build some skills. Again, in my journey of building a good foundation of personal and emotional boundaries, I did a lot of ignoring what the actual things that I was dealing with were. So kind of ponder about your stumbling blocks and how these principles can apply to you. And then I was also frustrated at a lack of to-dos. Like, I don't know if that's been something someone else has noticed, but I feel like you always hear this in good relationships, you have good boundaries. With good friends, you have good boundaries and blah, blah, blah. And they use this boundary, boundary, boundary term, but there's not a whole lot of how-tos. So this class is kind of going to be a how-to, and I, in advance, thank you for your bravery in helping me to come up with some good solutions as we continue and we talk through this. So vulnerability. These are my two favorite quotes. Vulnerability sounds like truth, feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weakness. Part of the scary part of boundary setting and stepping into that vulnerability, and I say the garden of vulnerability because it's stepping into that place where is the most, that's our most fertile ground for growth and for change and to become more Christ-like. In that vulnerability, in that garden of vulnerability, but there are some big spiders that we have to deal with in that garden. And our vulnerability makes us feel weak. But what's interesting is when I see someone else be vulnerable, I never see it as weakness. It always looks like courage to me. But when I feel it for myself, it feels like weakness. But it isn't. It is truth, and it is courage. It's being brave, and it's not easy. And that's okay. And so the good news about that is that when you're in a situation where you're trying to evolve and set some boundaries and figure this out in your life, if you're feeling vulnerable, you're feeling scared, you're feeling weak, you're doing it right. Because then you're in that place where you're going to be able to figure it out better and be able to grow. So the need for connection, and this is so important too. Desmond Tutu is one of my absolute heroes. He wrote this great book. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it, called The Book of Forgiving. And he talks about what forgiveness is, what forgiveness isn't, and he works through all of the steps of it, and it's so wonderful. False boundaries. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Doctor Who. We're huge Doctor Who fans. But this is a Cyberman. And what a Cyberman is in Doctor Who is it's a casing for a human where all the emotions, all the vulnerability, all of that are removed, and the mission is to attack and make everybody like them. A false boundary feels protected. And I would almost want to even have us change the word boundary, because boundary does sound like we need protection. And so it feels protective. But when we retreat into this suit, this cyber suit of wanting to be having this armor and like removing the vulnerable parts from it, it feels protective, but ultimately, you can't connect. And before we move on, though, I do want to say the primary focus of this class is not on physical, emotional, or any otherwise abusive relationships. However, I do think it is important to note, that when you have found yourself in an abusive relationship, sometimes with that person, it's good and even healthy to be a Cyberman for a little while, because often what we do is we have no concept of what a healthy boundary is, and we have to get to the point where we realize that we're worth being protected. And that can be an important step. The problem we get in is if we stay there for too long. And if we start applying it to where it doesn't need to apply, we start taking that into the whole rest of our world. And that's relatively common because it's easy. False boundaries are easy. So some examples of false boundaries are cynicism. When you're cynical, you're kind of out attacking the world. And cynicism, I feel, is a little tricky too, because it makes you feel smart. Like, for some reason, when we're being cynical, we feel like we're being smart. We're not. We're just attacking. We're in that, like, cyber suit. Someone comes up to us with an idea or a thought or something, and we answer cynical. We're just, bang, blocking it. No connection. That person feels put down. We feel put down. We feel it's just, it keeps us in our armor. Seeking vengeance. I taught my kids a long time ago that the term get even is never about getting even. We're never about trying to get you the same as you got me. It's like, if I tripped you, then getting even with me means you're going to like trip me and then kick me while I'm down. Because it's not really about getting even. It's about, you hurt me, you made me mad, so I'm going to punch you harder. Or I'm going to do this worse, or I'm going to make you pay. And that, again, that's a false boundary. It feels protective. When I was first learning about boundaries, I felt like that was the main lesson. The main lesson is you don't let anybody hurt you, and if they do, you get them back. And that means you have good boundaries. And I've come to learn that is not true. That continues a revenge cycle. It doesn't lead to healing, progression, or connection. So using a them mentality, this is all about them, their fault. They made me do it, they this, anything that where you're deflecting accountability away off of your cyber armor and you're just, or we or I, and I feel like we've all done this. Another favorite thing from Desmond Tutu in that book, that Book of Forgiving, is he talks about we straddle the line of being the hurt person and being the abuser person. And sometimes we do it to the same person on the same day. Like, sometimes we're harming them, they're harming us. We require forgiveness, they require forgiveness. Us versus them really does not foster an environment of vulnerability, and it does not foster an environment of growth. Contention, we know that contention can be discouraged. I feel like there's a very different, and this one gets muddy, I think, because often we think contention and we think, oh, I can't stand up for myself because that's contentious. And there's a very big difference in my mind about standing up for yourself versus fighting and being contentious. They are very different, and we're going to get into a little more of a reason why that is and some of the semantics around that. Holding grudges, never letting go, it just keeps you in. That really harms us more than it harms the other person. And it really keeps us in that cyber armor. Focusing all on outward things kind of ties to the us versus them mentality. Blame. I heard one of the things of the counselor that I worked with, he was LDS as well, and he said, weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth in our vernacular would be more like anger, blame, and self-pity. And those things really don't bring us into that garden of vulnerability. They don't help us connect and progress. So I want to open the question to you guys. With those principles in mind, what are some other examples that I may have completely missed about what could be a false boundary? Okay, that's fine. So a boundary, and that's actually really hard. I feel like there's a lack of really great definitions out there as well. So there can be boundaries about rules in your house. You can use the word boundary for that. There can be boundaries about rules of the land. I mean, there's all kinds of different things that a boundary could be. What we're talking very specifically in this class is how we are allowing ourselves to be treated and what to do when those expectations or boundaries are set and they are being pushed or they are being ignored completely, and how to handle that. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Holding a grudge, would that be a false boundary?
Yes. Holding a grudge would definitely be a false boundary. Yeah, it's okay. That's okay.
So it's kind of on there, but judging?
Yes. Yes. That's really good. We're going to address that a lot, but I didn't put it up there. But judging is, because judging, we are commanded in the Bible to judge righteously. But I feel that our righteous judgments are ones for ourselves. Like if I'm hanging around a friend that's using foul language and it doesn't bother me and I feel loving and peaceful and it's not affecting my feeling towards myself and it's not affecting the spirit that I have with me, I probably don't need to set a boundary for that. That's not really harming me. I don't need to be judgmental towards them about it. But if it is, if it's bringing me down, if it's harming me, if it's having, you know, it's doing something, then it's okay to judge righteously and say, I need to separate from that. But that's very different than judging them. Judging them, or judging ourselves compared to them, comparison judgment, yes. That is definitely one that would totally keep you in that armor. And so I like that visual of going, okay, is this keeping me in my armor, or is it helping me to be brave and step out of it? Are there any other thoughts? Yes?
Would say putting up a proverbial wall around yourself, like if you're not happy about the situation, and you're not happy, if a child is not happy about what their parent is putting on them, say a discipline
right.
of sorts, taking their phone or something like that, and they put up a wall and kind of lay low, but they are not happy, they are not participating, would that be a...
unhealthy? Are you talking the child doing that?
Yes.
I would say that is a little more of about they're having a hard time accepting the accountability for their behavior. And I don't know, I think the tricky thing is it applies so differently to different people. For some kids, that might be okay, and it's not really, it's just their way of dealing with something that they're uncomfortable with, and we need to let them deal with things in the way that they can handle that. And for some kids, it is, because their intention behind it is to get you back. And that's definitely a false boundary. Yes?
Does the silent treatment fall into that category as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The silent treatment is all aimed outward, almost always. If you're stepping away to avoid contention, that's different than the silent treatment. But if you're really just doing the silent treatment to try to manipulate or control the other person, that's a false boundary. Yes?
Avoidance. If there's somebody you just don't want to deal with, you just stay away from them. That's a fake boundary.
It is. That is a false boundary, and that was, I think, my favorite one for a long time. Like, the reason that I can break this apart and kind of have, like, a good idea is because I've done them all the wrong way. And I've done the avoidance, and I've totally not, stepped up and been willing to do that vulnerability. Yes?
Something I had trouble with is family members and assume boundaries. I can assume that this family member who I love
mm-hmm.
will not hurt me.
Right.
And
right.
So what is my position there? My position would be that I need space. I don't want this person.
Right.
So what do I do?
So we're gonna go further into that really soon, because that is the purpose of this class, is the what do I do? And that's why I titled it What I Did, because we can talk. I mean, you can sit there and you can make a list of all the things, ways you don't want to be treated, and the responsibility and accountability and the, consequence for what should happen when that isn't. But it doesn't mean anything if you don't know how to do it. It's like just words on a paper. Yes?
I don't know if this is right or not, but no. Sometimes people put on a happy face, and yet I still feel like there's a boundary there.
Right. Well, and... right. And that, I feel like that has a lot to do with people just not being willing to be genuine. And that's very much like that. In dealing with really true boundaries, we are mostly 98% dealing with ourselves. So if we are doing that, that would be like a false boundary. For someone else, putting on a face, a false face, I just feel bad for them. Like, I don't have to figure out why they're doing that. This, you know, just feel sad that they don't feel like they are comfortable to connect. Did anybody else have anything until we move on? Okay. So, I know I haven't stuck to my what I've said. Okay, so true boundaries. I love this picture of Christ because he's just so confident. He had great boundaries. He was very good at helping people know how to treat him. He was very brave. He was courageous. He knew who he was, and he didn't base his worth or his value on anything external. And that's really the first principle of building a strong boundary foundation in our relationships, is that we are not hanging our worth or our value in anybody else's house, in anybody else's mind, in anyone else's brain. We come to that with ourselves. A personal boundary that I've created for myself, and I've done it through, I read and I've studied a lot of Brené Brown. She's another one that has great content out there. And one of her favorite and most inspirational influences in her life is Maya Angelou, who gave who has this quote, and it's so confusing until you really work with it a little bit. But it talks about, I didn't write it down, so I'm not gonna, this isn't exact, but about belonging everywhere and nowhere. And that sounds like it doesn't make any sense, but the boundary that I've been able to create from some mentoring from Brené Brown, as well as some other sources as well, is we need to belong to ourselves. And for me, I need to know that I belong to my Heavenly Father. As a child of God, I belong to Him and I belong to me. And I don't need to worry about belonging anywhere else. And because of that, I belong nowhere. I don't belong to any group or organization. I don't belong to someone else. My worth and my value is not based in any outside thing. And then by belonging nowhere and belonging to myself and to my Father in heaven, I subsequently belong everywhere because that belonging comes with me. And it's not based on if somebody likes me, and it's not based on if somebody's upset with me, and it's not based on what my kids think of me or how other people define or view me or my success. So that's kind of the foundation of where those true boundaries can kind of come up from, and they will always allow us to be more vulnerable, be more comfortable with that vulnerability, and allow us to grow and thrive, and allow us to create the environment for real connection. My husband and I have been working a lot on this in the last few years, and with his permission this morning, I asked him, I said, it's not even in my talk, but it just kept coming into my mind to use this as an example. So if he comes, when years and years ago, he would come home from work, and if he had a bad day, I felt like, and maybe he didn't feel this way, but this was the narrative that was going on in my mind, I felt like he was so frustrated and impatient when the little kids were trying to like serve their dinner and he hadn't eaten in like 7 hours because he had a bad day at work. And he's just like, oh my gosh, just get me my food, you know? And he's just having a hard time. So my way of handling that, I never talked to him about it. I just decided to start serving up everybody's food before Dad got home. It didn't take me long because we had four little kids all pretty close together for me to really start resenting that because it was extra work. And I was resenting it going, he's making me do this. But he wasn't making me do it. I was doing it because I wanted a different environment than the one I thought was going on in his head. He didn't, because I didn't talk to him about it. When I talked to him this morning, he's like, I don't even know what's going on in my head. I was like, it was so long ago. But I read a book called Choice Theory, and that's a great book by Robert Glassett, I think. Another one I didn't read, but if you look up Choice Theory, you can find it. And ultimately, what I ended up doing is the behavior didn't even change. I still, if I knew that he had a hard day, I would still make sure everyone's food was on their plates. But I did it because I was making the choice, and I wasn't externally pushing that towards him. So in that circumstance, I feel like the boundary, the behavior that I was doing, the how-to part of it was the same, but the motivation was different. I wasn't doing it because I felt that he needed me to do that. I was doing it because I wanted to, because I wanted to be compassionate and loving towards his day and not have him stressed out. But I really also just didn't want to hear him complain that he would, and he never really did. It was more like the looks on his face. But anyway, so like it wasn't verbal, but it was obvious. Because I just didn't want to have that. And when I owned that and set that as like kind of a to-do boundary for myself, totally changed it. No resentment, no frustration. I knew who I was doing that for. And that's a good example in the belonging category. I was working on belonging to myself, doing what I could in my environment to belong to myself and not belong to my husband and not have my husband's reactions dictate any value and belonging to myself. And the funny caveat with that, because in a marriage relationship, we really want connection and we really want to be together as one. But my husband and I have found that as we each work on building our sense of self and our sense of personal belonging, it has been so much easier and better, and our marriage is so much better for it, for us to be two individuals that are choosing to be together. And instead of being trying to be two halves of one whole, we're two whole people that really enjoy each other. It's a very different dynamic. So even though it sounds kind of, let's not, like I don't belong to my husband, I belong to myself, it is really nice to grow with him and to have these experiences alongside of him. So that's really, really good. So the principles of true boundaries that I want to talk about are, they're based in, this is the thing. I do enjoy public speaking, and my time has gone way faster than I anticipated. I'm like, woo. So they're very based in self-respect and compassion, about taking accountability for what you can control and not blaming other people like I was doing with the dinner, not blaming somebody else for our actions, but taking accountability for our actions. They're focused much more inwardly. They come from a place where we can be forgiving, and forgive my typo, I just noticed that one just now. But they're not blame, they're firm. They're not wishy-washy. It's not about being wishy-washy. It's about being firm, but not being cruel. And it's about patience with yourself and with others. Self-compassion is one of the first things as we're building how to teach people how to treat us, and as we're building our own personal foundation structure, is self-compassion. That's hard. I feel like oftentimes we treat ourselves way worse than we would treat our best friend. But when we come from a place of self-compassion, it is so much easier to then extend that out to other people forward. So there's a really great TED Talk, and it's the only time that I have found how-tos on the subject of emotional and relationship boundaries. From, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing her name right, but it's Sari Gilman gave a wonderful TED Talk about boundaries. She talks about our yes and no compass. Like it really gets down, like the really, I think, maybe simplify answer to the question earlier about what exactly boundaries can be defined as. It's really kind of comes down very simply to this yes, no compass that we have. Are we gonna say yes? Are we gonna say no? Is this okay? Is it not okay? It's pretty simple. There's no emotion in a yes, no answer. It's just a yes, it's just a no. But it's not that easy, is it? Our compasses are so easily swayed by feelings of guilt, by feelings of value, like where we place our value. It's so easily swayed by being tired. It's so easily swayed by so many different, sometimes social expectations, sometimes just the environment that we have with our friends or our families or our relatives. So I like the visual, though, of a yes or no compass, because it can help us simplify it out when we're struggling with all those emotions, with all those feelings of guilt or whatever it is that we're struggling with. We can kind of go, okay, if I take those out, where is my yes or no compass pointing? Does that make sense? Does that work? So we have that compass and we can say, I'm saying no, but then my friend feels really bad. And then I'm going, oh, I'm going to say yes. No, I'm going to say no. Oh, but my kids are really, really, really disappointed. Oh, I'm going to say yes. Nope, I'm going to say no. And sometimes we just say yes when we really mean no. And being very genuine and vulnerable, because it is so vulnerable to stand in a place of saying no when someone's mad at you for saying that. And almost always, when you start requiring other people to treat you better, they will push back and they'll get mad. Almost always. Not always, but almost always. But that's okay, because they can feel that and you're not responsible for it. And on the flip side of that, when other people are setting boundaries and being a lot more firm on how we treat them, we can get mad at them too. And that's really like, we're like, what? Like, you've always done this for me before. Why aren't you doing this? Why do you need to do this? Am I like a terrible monster? Now you're trying to like tell me not to do that. Like, it's like, it just gets, you know, so messy and confused, but it's okay. It's okay for someone to be upset with you. Yes.
So I find that, like, because right now I'm really good at saying no, but then I also find that people stop asking.
Right. And that can totally happen.
So yeah, so like, how do I reconcile like wanting to serve, like wanting to participate and stuff, but then because my boundary is so strong, like how do I reestablish trust with people that I want to be able to help?
Right. My thought on that is there may be something that isn't so much a real boundary as it might be a false boundary that you're really, really trying to not get taken advantage of. So just kind of have a no wall up. And I think the best way is you can start changing your words. You can be like, I really can't do it today, but I wish that I could, and ask me again. You can always say that. Please ask me again. Or follow up with them later and say, hey, today's a way better day for me. Can I help you today? I couldn't yesterday because my kids had 17 appointments and a million things going on, but I can today. What can I do to help you? And then kind of reach out to them to kind of extend that branch. Also, it's really good to work on just kind of sitting in that uncomfortable space of someone's upset with you. That's really hard for me. That's been a huge hurdle for me to overcome. Because you have no control over it. You really don't. If someone wants to be upset, they'll be upset. And if you do have accountability for doing something, then apologize, of course. Try to make it right if you can. All the things, you know, that we talk about in apologizing. But yeah, also, you know, review that boundary. Say, is this a false boundary? Or is this really where I need to be right now? And if it's really where you need to be right now, that's okay, then you worry about the building trust later. And you let it go. It's okay. Okay, so our boundary structure. I'm not a graphic person, so this was like the best I can do. It's like, it starts with our self boundaries. So self boundaries, this is where I really want to come up with some good how-tos. Self boundaries are very rooted in our self-care and our self-respect. I am a better person. We all can be such better people when we have better boundaries for ourselves. The boundary that I do with myself right now is I don't think, I don't entertain, not that the thoughts never come in, thoughts that are negative towards myself, that negative self-talk that we do still happens. Still happens every day, but I don't entertain it anymore. It's a boundary I've set for myself. A self-boundary, I don't even have to say it or explain it to anybody else, is that I'm very firm on I am not responsible for other people's thoughts. Very firm on it. And that has grown from being in relationships, some very close relationships, where I've known people and crossed paths with people who have a level of mental illness where they will make things up that never happened. And if they're in a place where they're feeling attacked all the time, they make things up. It's happened on a couple different occasions with a couple different people. And then they require you to be accountable for it and apologize for it and jump through these hoops because you hurt them. And you're like, but I didn't do anything. I wasn't even there that day. Like, I haven't even talked to you in a week or a year. But you think I did these things? And it's a little bit like gaslighting. Is anybody here not familiar with the term gaslighting? I can explain it if someone needs it. Okay, gaslighting is when, say if I were to, well, it comes from a movie, a really, really old movie, where a man married a wealthy woman, and he married her for her wealth, and he was trying to get her institutionalized. So he would go on, and he would turn all there. They had gas lights throughout the house. This was back in the day of all the lights in their house were gas-powered. And he'd go, and he'd turn them all on. And then she'd turn them all off. And she'd be like, why did you turn the lights on? He'd go, I didn't turn the lights on. What are you talking about? And then the next day, he'd go and turn them all on. And then she'd come, and she'd turn them off, and she was like, it's in the middle of the day. Why are you doing that? I'm not doing that. And he intentionally did this until she believed herself to be totally crazy, and she was institutionalized, and he benefited with her wealth. Gaslighting is a very manipulative behavior. It's when I'm blaming you for my actions that I did to rile you up, when the action is done with the intent of making you mad, and then you're making that up. You're just being oversensitive, or you don't make it up. But there's also mental illnesses where people will make things up. It's kind of like gaslighting, except it's not in that when gaslighting is a lot, it's much more intentional with the intent to make the person feel crazy or small or something like that, or to exercise power over somebody in a manipulative way. The mental illness, I have dealt with people with schizophrenia and other personality disorders, they really believe that what they made up is true. So I'm not entirely sure. It feels like gaslighting, because you just sit there and you question your sanity. You're like, you have details. Like, they'll go into details about what they were eating, who else saw it. I mean, it's all these details. And then when you say, no, that didn't happen, they either get mad at you because they believe you to be lying to them, or they write you off as you're the crazy person. Because I've dealt with people that way, a very strong boundary for me is that I am not responsible for someone else's thoughts. And it doesn't mean I'm cold or I don't care what you think, but I will take a moment before I interact with somebody to really ponder and really self-evaluate on what I'm actually accountable for. And then I don't go into the areas that I'm not accountable for. I just don't do it. I just say, I'm sorry you're upset about it, but I don't believe that I'm accountable for it. I'm sorry if this situation has bothered you. You're going to have to figure it out. Did you raise your hand? No? Okay. So self-boundaries, really being built on self-respect. They're the scariest in a lot of ways, because we have to decide that we're more in control of how we allow people to treat us than not. So if when we start with that good foundation of self-boundaries, then we move to family boundaries. So you had mentioned to me before about a boundary-pushing kiddo. I have them too. In the last couple weeks, I have been accused of being a prison warden, because our house is basically the same thing as jail. Because we're not allowed to watch YouTube. Just saying. Well, they're allowed to watch YouTube, but they can't do it privately on their own computers. So they can only watch it in the living room, where everyone can see what they're watching. And that's basically the way it runs in prison, right? I mean, we all know that. So, so boundaries with our kids and with other people. In most adult relationships, it is not ever appropriate, unless something has gone to the place of abuse where authorities need to be involved, to impose a consequence upon another person if they're crossing your boundaries. Because that's trying to control their agency, and that's not appropriate for us to do. In the situation with our kids, we need to teach them that their actions bring about accountability, that our actions have consequences, good or bad. So one of the biggest things that we can do, the only thing, I think, that will stick with them so much more than whatever discipline program we have in place, is how we model those boundaries. So to pull an example from a Brené Brown book, it's called The Power of Imperfect Parenting, she gives this really good story, and again, I'm going to butcher it, but, you know, I'll try, where she says, if my teenage child comes up to me and says, I really want to go to this party, The parents are going to be there, and like all my friends are going to be there. There's going to be adults there, and I just really, really want to go. But as a parent, you're like, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't know those parents. I don't know what kids are going to be there, or if that kid is even telling the truth to my kid about parents. And so I say no. And then she goes, Mom, but I'm going to be the nerd. Like, I'm going to be the outcast. No one's going to like me anymore. I'm going to lose my friends. And if our no on our no compass changes to a yes, it's so much easier for her. I used to say her, them, the kids. I have all girls, so I just kind of do that. It's easier for them when they're at the party and someone hands them a drink that they know they're not supposed to drink or wants to do something risky that they know they're not supposed to do and they're not even comfortable doing it. And they say no, and then their friends are like, oh, but aren't you my friend? Don't you want to be cool with us? Don't you want to do this? And they start applying that same pressure. Subconsciously, it's so much easier for that kid to go, yeah, no only means no until friendship's on the line. Then it doesn't mean anything. Or if the line the child uses is, I thought we were friends, you're the meanest person, you're my prison warden. You know, this is just like prison. And I'm like, you know what? You're right, I should give you more freedom, you can go ahead and go. Then, maybe not at that party, but some other time in their lives, they are up against something, they've said no, and then the person gets angry. But that means you hate me, I'm not gonna be your friend, that means this, and they just really get mad. The model that was set for them is no means no until someone's mad. And that doesn't mean anything. Boundaries without consequences don't mean anything. And boundaries that are just moved. And sometimes it's appropriate to change your no to a yes. That can happen. But I would advise that we do it in more of a counsel session and not a led by a whining, upset child or anything like that. Also, the way most of the time, and even modeling it with kids, I think the best way is to model the boundary yourself in what you can do. So if they're, when they're small, if they're, you know, kicking you, just use an odd example, they're just kicking you and you tell them to stop and they don't. You tell them to stop and they don't. You go, okay, that hurts me. You can't do that to me anymore. And if you do, I'm going to leave. And then they do it again and you leave and that's their consequence. But it's not about if you stop, if you don't do that, then you have to go do something. Then you have to go, you know, take an action. Sometimes with kids, and then that's really fuzzy and that really needs to be worked out and with a lot of prayer, really. But also, a thought on that in kids that push boundaries is that it's worth it to be exhausted and to still hold the boundaries. Another thing that I've often heard is grounding your kids is like chaining yourself to an elephant because they're miserable, they're upset, you don't want to have to deal with it, they don't want to have to deal with you, you just want to get away from each other, it's really hard, it's difficult, but that it is worth it to hold that boundary, to hold that no in a warm and loving way. It can be warm and loving. And when the time is right, maybe explain that. I definitely explain to my kids, I don't make up these rules just to make you mad. I make them up because I want you to be safe. And I could be getting it wrong. Maybe I'm totally wrong. But in this moment right now, I need to be truthful and genuine to what I feel is right for you. And being disappointed you're not going to some party or you're not watching YouTube or whatever isn't going to kill you. I promise. Like, you're going to be okay. And you can replace it with something else fun that I approve of. So that's fine. And then everyone else. So the everyone else is really, really where that we need to take action as opposed to impose a behavior on somebody else. As an example, one of the people in my life who is the one who is one that makes up things and then blames me for the things that they've made up was sending me a lot of angry text messages. My answer to him was not, if you continue to send me text messages, you're going to have to something, like whatever, you know, or even saying, you can't send me text messages. There was no, you have to stop doing that. I don't like it. You have to stop. You need to not do that anymore. I just said, if you continue to do that, I'll block you from my phone. And guess what? Happened again. Not even 24 hours later. So I just said, I asked you not to do that, and now I'm blocking you. Done. All done. And it had to do with me. And that person got really, really mad and tried to go through someone else to tell me off about it. And I just said, no. No. We're not going to do that. I gave you a boundary. This is your consequence. I'm sorry if you don't like it. But it's not a consequence that I'm requiring them to do, but it's a consequence that I do. So my daughter found this online, and I really like that. It's worth taking a picture of and reminding yourself about. Self-care and these self-compassion boundaries that we're talking about and all of that is being able to see and evaluate putting your needs above other people's wants, because we have needs that need to be filled. And sometimes someone's pushing against a boundary because of their want, right? And selfishness would be putting your wants above others' needs, which I actually think we do to our kids often. At least I'm definitely really guilty of that. They'll be having a need, and I'll put my want above their need. Another good tool that you could look up if you want to is a personal bill of rights. There's tons of information out there on it, and you can kind of build your bill of rights and understand that everybody else has that same bill of rights. But making sure we're not calling a want a need, and that we're not calling a need a want, that we're semantically classifying those the appropriate way and then dealing with them appropriately. So accountability. Boundaries without accountability are not very effective. If I tell my kid no a million times that they can't dump something out on the floor or whatever, there's never a consequence, it doesn't mean anything. That's true in adult relationships too. If there's never a consequence, like blocking someone, like if you continue to do this, to address your question a little bit, when you have someone that you're related to that's hurt you and you never saw it coming, deciding, okay, what can I do? And a really, really good example of this was so powerful to me, and I don't even know this person, but this was a coworker of my brother's who married someone who had a really pretty in-depth bipolar disorder is a very spectrum illness, and he was pretty high on that bipolar spectrum. And he was mostly good about taking the medication he needed to and getting the counseling and doing all the things that he needed to. But it would lapse sometimes, and he wouldn't. And he was really hard to deal with. He was really, really hard to deal with. And instead of her going, okay, well, now you have to go back. You have to take your medicine. This is what you have to do. This is this. She just said, you know what? When you're like this, because you're not taking the steps you need to take to manage your bipolar disorder, I'm taking the kids to a hotel that weekend. And we're going to have a fun weekend. We're going to go swimming. I loved that, and I loved the powerful example of her saying, I'm going to do something, and set that boundary. And that was so perfectly principled on self-compassion. She's saying, having compassion for myself, it is really hard for me to be home with my husband right now when he's in a really depressive or even a really manic state, depending on what he was doing at the time. So I'm going to remove myself from the situation. That was something that person could do. So I want to open it to you guys. Taking this, I love this quote. This is from the, I found it from the LDS.org Addiction Recovery Family Support Manual, which is a great manual, and it doesn't get the attention I think it needs to, because it really isn't all about having a family member with an addiction. It's really, my personal name for it is, when other people's agency is hard for you to deal with, you should read this manual. And other people's agency is always hard for us to deal with, or often hard. You know, it's a great manual. But Elder Richard G. Scott counseled, do not attempt to override agency. The Lord himself would not do that. Forced obedience yields no blessings. And when we're dealing with interpersonal relationships, in-law relationships, work relationships, neighbor relationships, all of that, if we really are trying to put that accountability for crossing a boundary, it could be, I am not comfortable with this or that thing, whatever it is. And this is where I kind of want to open it up. If you're willing to be vulnerable enough to share something you're actually struggling with, and we can kind of build a strategy for you when you leave, that would be beautiful. And I want to open that out to you guys. Who has something that they would like to build a strategy for and is willing to have the bravery to talk about it for a minute? It's hard. I know. Yes?
I have a 10-year-old son, and he had, right now he's throwing a lot of the false boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
No one can focus on anything else, do anything else, say anything else, because it is all. He comes in and he has decided that no one else will do anything else.
Yeah. It's almost the opposite of the brick wall. It's like, here's my bucket of everything that you guys all have to deal with.
And
right.
So sometimes he'll take it out on his sister, and it's like, and that is not okay. It's not okay with me. It's like way less okay with me than like when he just does it to me.
Right.
And so I am trying to figure out what to do. First, I decided, well, when he does this, do I just leave? But then he started to follow me.
Right.
And then I would start to get, so he's ADD and I'm ADD.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for me to kind of regroup and figure out what to do so I don't just lash out with the first thing that pops into my head, I have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
When he follows me, I can't do that.
Right.
And then both of us would really start butting heads. And then, so ignoring him didn't work. So I would start to get really, really strict with him and really severe. That didn't work either, because then it just made him feel like he was no longer his mentor or his parent, and that was somebody that he needed to struggle with.
Right.
So that didn't work either. And so I'm still struggling to figure out, and then now he's starting to deal with other people, and I'm trying to figure out his, so it's like I can't have anybody else take care of him. So he's starting to set himself up so that no one else will be able to go to anyone's house or go on
Right. Right. And that's, I don't know, I have one that's pretty similar. Nobody can do anything when that kid's upset. And some of the things, the strategies that we've done, because she will continue to like push, is I say, I am not going to talk to you. You can continue to talk to me if you want to, but I am not going to talk back to you until we settle down. And that's, and also I find a lot of help in counseling about it with that kid when they're not upset. Like, here's what happens. I love you so much. What can we do to help this? Because when you're doing that, it's hurting other people. And I'm worried that it's going to be really hard for you down the road. And so I want to give you a plan, and we want to come up with a plan together. I don't know if you've tried anything like that, and I certainly don't have all the answers. But to come up with a plan together and to find out what is the need that he's needing to address, so that when that happens, you can say, okay, you're talking about soccer, but it's not really about soccer. It's that you don't feel good enough. Or whatever. These are just examples. So let's find something that we can talk about real quick in those moments that are going to make you feel better about yourself. It's a good idea in those situations to model the self-compassion and to say, you know, you followed me and I kind of blew up at you and I'm really, really sorry that I did that. Apologize for it. Also say, but just like, you know, I have compassion on you because you're 10 and you're having a hard time dealing with it. I'm a mom. This is the first time I've ever dealt with it. It's hard for me too. And to have that self-compassion. And maybe give him a tool like a tape recorder might work where he can unload all of that. Like, go for it. Or another thing my kids love, oh, this is really fun, is when they're really struggling with each other, to write it all out on a sheet of paper and take it to our driveway and burn it. They love it. Because then they get something to do and they get to write it down, they get to get it out, and then get rid of it in a pretty fun way for kids, unless fire's not a good idea. No, whatever. Thank you. I am down to 2 minutes, and I'm kind of bummed because I really did want to talk more about those. And this topic for me is one that's so interesting. I was not raised with an understanding of healthy boundaries. My understanding of healthy boundaries when I was growing up was when someone does something mean to you, you have every right to get them back so that you're not being walked all over. Or if someone's mad at you, then you just give in. And so that's kind of my history and boundaries. And I've really, really grown, and I love this topic. And it is a hard one, and it does require some vulnerability. But my hope is that we can start opening that up, and we can, by knowing the principles of what a true boundary is, we can start building strategies to help us build those true boundaries so that we can have this image in our countenance. And that image in our countenance doesn't come because people treat us right all the time. People didn't treat Christ right all the time. They treated him terribly. But he knew that his value was not tied to how someone else is treating him. And your value is not tied to how somebody else is treating you. And you can have people, you can request from them and lay the consequence out. And that's okay. And it's okay if they're upset. And if you're a little scared, if it feels vulnerable, if it's hard, then you're doing it right. And it's okay. And I want to leave that with you. And the other thing, my last thought, is the reason that we can be so calm and peaceful and secure in our sense of our worth and to not hang our value on other people and to worry only about belonging to ourselves and belonging to Christ is because he has our back. He's okay. And anything that someone has done that has harmed us or hurt us, he's aware of it, and he's already dealt with it, and we can always go to Christ. And I say this in the name of Jesus Christ, amen. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that in these talks, but...
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.